For the full Tracy Money Audio commentary, this is Owen Tracy. Recording is 2:45 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is June 16th. I thought we'd kick off with currencies, and the pound is up a cent and 75 ticks in here today. So that's extending the bounce that we had yesterday. And the Bank of England raised interest rates by 25 basis points today. It was a big day for a lot of central banks because the Federal Reserve, having raised rates by 75 basis points yesterday, it's also helping to highlight the fact that the only place in the world that hasn't really talked about raising rates yet is Japan. Even Switzerland has begun to raise rates. So that also represented an upward dynamic for the franc. And now we're seeing it pulling back from the parity, or well, the dollar pulling back from parity. So, now, it hasn't been especially, or hasn't been trading around a lot for the last few years, moving in a very tight band of about 90 cents, which is basic, or a tight band, excuse me, of 10 cents, which is effectively a peg. But it doesn't look likely that the dollar is going to break above parity versus the Swiss franc anytime soon. Then we can think about the euro. So, one thing that I thought was interesting is there's some commentary around the fact that it's likely that 3% would be the hurdle that the Bank of England would have to get to in order to control inflation. And that sounds fine, except for the fact that how are they going to get to 3%? And is that the terminal value? And I think this is the more important point that investors are starting to look at when you look at the dot plot from the Federal Reserve. They're talking about potentially getting up into the threes, but then what happens afterwards? Is the terminal value for interest rates in the low fours? And if that's the case, and there is already pricing in for the potential that interest rates might be coming down again by 2024, well, then you'd have to be considering that there's the strong likelihood there will be a recession, and there will have to be retrograde action and reactions by central banks to cut rates. But we're not at that point yet, and instead, inflation is very much front and center. But of course, inflation isn't going to be impacted by interest rates. Or at least it's not really a question of impacting supply. Now we've had a lot of supply problems, but what we're definitely looking at is central banks attempting to to tackle the inflation problem through demand. So this is an interesting situation because we've got the dollar, which has been exceptionally firm, beginning to ease. If we simply look at this on the Bloomberg Dollar Index, which is a broader based measure than the dollar index, that's a long tail on the candle and suggests at least a near-term resistance at the upper side of the range. When we look at the more euro-dominated dollar index, it's also a long candle and potentially, although we're not there yet, but potentially a failed upside break. And then, what are the kinds of assets that do well in a weaker dollar environment? Well, gold would be one of those. It's been basically going sideways for a year and a half, and it's bouncing over the last 2 days from the $1,800 level. It has not yet unwound that big downward dynamic from Monday, and I have no make absolutely. No apology. I found that rather disheartening, and I've been looking at my long leveraged position and thinking about how much pain am I willing to accept. So I'm certainly feeling a bit better about it after a rebound over the last 2 days. But it's got to do more than that. And of course, what happens in terms of the dollar is likely to have a rather significant impact on how people view the potential for precious metals. But we are seeing more impressive rebounds coming through. So platinum prices are bouncing again from the $900 level. They haven't quite yet succeeded to push above 1,000, and that's been the case now for the last 3 months. I think it's a big psychological level for a lot of people. And if platinum can sustain a move above that level, well, then it will be completing the base formation. I think arguably this is a first step above the base, or mostly above the base, over the course of the last year. Silver prices have a more well-defined first step above the base characteristic and continue to steady from above this $20 level. Then we can think about the gold shares. They came all the way down to test the $30 level again. This has been at least the fifth time since November that this level has been tested and we've seen a bounce. Now, of course, the bounces will have to do a bit better than they have been doing, and most particularly sustain a move above the $40 level in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But when we look at this on the longer term, it does look increasingly likely that we are going to be in a trending environment sooner or later. The maddeningly frustrating thing about first steps above the base is that they can go on for longer than you might be comfortable with. But the reality is, as long as the breakout holds, well, we're still in a demand-dominated environment over the long term, because people are willing to buy at higher levels now than at any point between 2013 and the end of 2019. And that's an important characteristic that helps to differentiate the breakout being sustained from the long volatile base formation. Now, of course, the question will be which country is going to move into a recession first? But we're definitely seeing that lots of currencies right now are bouncing versus the US dollar. And then, of course, if gold is beginning to steady, people will also be looking at other commodities. Now, copper prices were in negative territory today, but off the low. And right in the region of the $4 level, this is where demand needs to be coming back into dominance. So it's a rather important level to find support, because we have failed upside breaks, a massive reaction against the prevailing trend and resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. This isn't a bullish chart. We need to see clear evidence of support building and recovery in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And then we have oil, and it was up a dollar. Now it was down as much as $2 earlier on today. So we're at a rather interesting juncture here as well. And it's another example of this divergence between supply and demand. Supply is falling. So we have US domestic supply is up to about 12 million barrels, and it peaked last year at about 13 million barrels and fell briefly to about 10, bobbed around 11, and is beginning to recover. But on the other side of the equation, you have Libya, which provides about 1.2 million barrels a day, and 1.1 million barrels of those have been knocked out because of political volatility. The sanctions against Russia mean that supply is falling. Now, supply is going to continue to trend lower in Russia because they're going to have difficulty sourcing materials. They're running out of things like ball bearings, and they don't have the highly skilled oil services people that work for people like Halliburton or Schlumberger. They're all gone. And this is exactly what happened with Iran. So Iran saw that their production declined markedly when sanctions were introduced. So this is obviously a tailwind in terms of supply, because more and more spare capacity is going to have to be brought online to compensate for the loss of Russian capacity. Then, of course, the other side of that, the next portion of the argument is about demand. Europe is experiencing significant contractionary forces. So we can see this graphically. If we look at the long-term chart of the Eurostoxx index, which is all the Eurozone companies, then we saw it break above the 450 level at the end of last year. And that looked like the completion of a 20-year range, and now that move has failed. And most particularly, it is back below the 400 level, so it's pushing back down into the underlying trading range. But this is a big failed upside break, and the dynamic of the failure is larger than the dynamic of the breakout. So we have to be prepared for a significant decline in European markets. Then we can think about the outlook for gas. So this is UK gas, and it broke out yesterday, and then it rallied through 300 in early trading today and started to come straight back down again. And this is Dutch gas, and it really had a very similar phenomenon. It got all the way up to 100 and then pulled back again. So we have this situation where exporting ability from Texas has been impinged by the fire last week, and they reckon it's going to take about 3 months to repair. As soon as that news broke, Russia started cutting back on supply of gas to Europe. So they're trying to tighten the screws on Europe and force Europe to come to the table to negotiate. And that's obviously it's something that is going to be difficult to do right now. But by the time we get to winter, and this war has been going on for the better part of a year, and the economies are under severe stress as a result of high energy prices, then is that going to start hitting demand? And potentially, that's what we're starting to see with this gas price, that it isn't able to sustain the rallies. But oil prices do look likely to be able to rebound from these levels. Then we have US natural gas prices. And they popped on the upside this morning because of low inventory levels. But when you don't have the same quantity of gas being exported, well, there's a lot more gas around to be reinjected into inventory. So that's less likely to be a problematic factor. And it remains the base case that natural gas prices are going to start coming back down again because there's no real additional supply or demand driver if LNG capacity is offline. Now, it doesn't mean that natural gas can't ramp higher again in the next few months, but it's probably going to go down before it goes back up again, because LNG demand will rise, and certainly Asia isn't about to stop buying it either. But it does, I think we're in a volatile environment. And then we have the Nasdaq breaking on the downside in here today, opening lower and at finishing pretty close to the low of the day. And almost every share was in negative territory. Lucid Group and Tesla leading on the downside. And I find that particularly interesting because these are electric vehicle manufacturers. And one would think that in a rising energy price environment, then that should be positive. But Lucid has been exceptionally volatile. And it's very much one of those companies that is heavily dependent on liquidity and interest rates. So it's continuing to come down. Tesla raised prices on all its vehicles by another $6,000 in here today. That didn't favor the stock, and it was down another 10%. So coming back towards this $600 level. The problem for liquidity oriented assets is that central banks everywhere are raising interest rates. So Bitcoin, having rebounded off the 20,000 level yesterday, initially popped on the upside in here today and then started to come back down again. And we've definitely seen that there have been a lot of commentary and interest about Bitcoin. It's significantly below the 1,000-day moving average now. So that's a major trend in consistency. And what I thought was interesting, I don't get many emails from crypto bulls, but I got one today. And the person is not a subscriber, but saying, would it be possible for me to have my say? And promoting another cryptocurrency and saying, well, this is the one, and you can mine it on your phone. And it's going to be, you're going to have a know your customer, so there won't be anonymity. So it's not going to be the preserve of criminals. And 80% declines in Bitcoin are normal. So this is the perfect buying opportunity. Well, I find this kind, I am a believer in many respects in serendipity. Because sometimes you need to just be aware of what's going on around you and to think about what are the motivations of other people, how are the markets evolving, and is my life experience different from anybody else's? In other words, I don't think there's anything special about me, and therefore, if I'm experiencing something, it's probably reflective of what's going on out there in the market. Because this exact same kind of argument is being used to draw people back in, and yet the price is not rallying. And the key levels of support are not holding. So the first one is the 1,000-day moving average. Now, there have been times when Bitcoin has traded below it, and they haven't lasted very long. The breakouts haven't been sustained, or the breakdowns, I should say, have not been sustained, and then subsequently it rallies impressively. Now, we can just look at what those looked like. So we had that towards the end of 2018. Prices eventually started to rebound, and we had a higher reaction low really quite quickly. And by the time we got around to February, there was a higher reaction low. Then we had a break back above the 1,000-day moving average in April. And I think if one were a betting person, then that was a tradable signal. We had a brief flurry below the 1,000-day moving average during the pandemic. And now this is a dynamic move below the 1,000-day moving average. Then the other big consistency characteristic for a lot of crypto bulls is that breakouts have always been sustained from these long ranges, and previous spike peaks have never been taken out, and we're there right now. So within the next $1,500, we're going to find out whether this high from back in 2017 is going to hold. So it's a really delicate situation. And if Bitcoin is pulling back, Ethereum is pulling back almost faster. It was down another $73 today. It's down from 5,000 to 1,000. And this is in advance of a major technological change, and a change from the proof of work to basically their staking method of establishing value, which of course is unproven. So this is obviously more about liquidity than anything else. And There's a lot of people that are very desperate in order to try and accumulate interest in whatever they're sponsoring. And there's obviously the clear temptation among many people to buy the dip and to think that buying the dip always works because we've got lots of experience of it. But the reality is that central banks everywhere are beginning to raise interest rates. And inflationary pressures are still very much front and center. And even Japan is under pressure to begin raising rates. And the yen strengthened today by 1.75, and it's very oversold. If we continue to see oil prices pushing higher, and we see continued pressure being exerted by energy prices on various economies and consumers, and we continue to see that agriculture prices stay high. Now, we've definitely seen that we've had a massive spike higher in agricultural commodities, and wheat, more importantly, than the spike, hasn't pulled back. We can think about coffee, where there is no real pressure from Ukraine. Yet prices are bouncing and clearly firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. This isn't about Ukraine. It's not about geopolitics. It's much more about the fact that Brazil has had two frosts, one year after the other. And one of the subscribers at the chart seminar was mentioning that there were frosts in southern Brazil about 25 years ago. And I don't remember the exact dates. And they happened one after another. So the response was to simply move further north. Well, that obviously represents a massive change in the fundamentals, and it might require another relocation of Arabica bean planting within Brazil. So there's obvious upward pressure on commodity prices, and some of them are going to be geopolitically related, and some are going to be climate related. But those are clear inflationary pressures. And the only way that prices are going to come back down is if demand evaporates, and that is pointing towards recessions and tighter liquidity conditions. And in that environment, crypto being the prime liquidity driver or barometer is likely to experience some of the deepest selling pressure. So we're at a really critical juncture. And of course, then the bigger question is if the dollar rolls over and we ultimately start to think about, well, what will be the government responses to contracting economies? Are they eventually then going to have to make more money available and try and stimulate their economies, or at least try and impose price controls on energy and food? That's obviously going to curtail inflation in the short term and make the problem worse in the long term. And then hard assets start to become really attractive. So we're at also a really interesting point here for gold because it really hasn't gone anywhere for a year and a half. And there's a good, I think, healthy argument going on right now whether the ranging pattern that we've had over the last 18 months is similar to the pattern that was present between 2011 and 13. And I would argue that they do look the same. We had a spiky peak and a period of ranging. But this one occurred after a really impressive bull market. And this one occurred after a really lengthy period of not much happening. So Of course, this is eerily similar to the copper price. And we are at the beginning of a new secular bull market where we're going to see significant new highs, or we're going to see it fail, like we did in 2011 and 12. But in order for it to fail, it would have to break down from this range. And more importantly, it would need to sustain that move. And at present, at least, we're seeing evidence of the $1,800 level hold. And if the dollar index continues to pull back because of the rising risk of a recession, then that's going to be positive for gold. One thing that I also thought was particularly relevant yesterday, and I think it is worth highlighting again today, is that Jay Powell basically told people don't buy homes. So Lennar Corp, which is one of the home builders, pulled back sharply through the 1,000-day moving average in here today. When we think about the wider sector, well, every one of them was in negative territory, and some were down by even more. So we've got Beazer, which would be a somewhat smaller home builder, and Toll Brothers, which is a, I guess what we might consider a luxury home builder, or certainly a higher price, nicer home builder, had been right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average and then broke lower in here today. So demand for homes looks likely to ease. Certainly, the supply of new homes is going to ease if the building starts are curtailed by higher interest rates and just the inavailability of credit. So we're certainly moving into a more uncertain environment, and stocks continue to surprise on the downside. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.